Still gonna bring the heat.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cloud 259 Running on Air. I'm Greg Lemelstein. As always, I'm with my co-host, Bren Jones. Hi, Bren.
Hey, Greg.
It's May 10th, 2018. This is episode 65. Bren, what do we have?
Tonight, we're going to talk about the top Americans in London. So, Greg, you're going to introduce, I believe, Fernando Cabada and Stephanie Bruce. We're really excited to have these two runners on the show today. A really great contrast of interviews. Usually we do a lot of talking here, and Greg, tonight we're going to get two for the price of one or two for the price of none, as we've had no interviews in a few recent shows. We're going to have, we're going to get out of the way and let these runners tell their stories and do the talking for us. So Greg, why don't you set it up? And after the interviews, we'll touch base a little bit on a little bit of pro news outside of these races, and I'll discuss a few results from the Eugene Marathon, Greg.
Sounds great. You know, I do have one stat. So both of our interviews were in the London Marathon. They were the top Americans in the men's and women's field. The London Marathon, not quite as bad the weather as Boston, but pretty bad in that it was too hot. So I looked through the results of all the elites on the men's and women's side. None of them had a negative split. All of them had a slower second half than a first half. And I also looked at the top 1,000 men's finishers and top 1,000 women's finishers. So how many of each would you guess, Bren, had a negative split? How many of them ran faster in the second half at London?
Oh, that's a nice data dive, Greg. I would say, well, how about 3%?
You are pretty much spot on, Bren. That's
sweet.
Pretty incredible.
What do I win, yeah. Greg? What do I win?
You win a big fat nothing. But of the top... Of the top 1,000 men, only 32 of them ran faster the second half. And of the top 1,000 women, only 26 of them. Now, these are really good experienced runners. They know what they're doing. The top 1,000 men were all under 3 hours. And it doesn't count, you know, people who had to drop out. So these are all finishers who finished in good times, but they all, 97% of them slowed down.
Is the course, is it harder on the back half, Greg, or is it all attributable to weather?
It's a great point. It is a bit slower, but just a bit on the back half. There's a downhill mile that's basically mile three. Mm-hmm. I think we touched on this last episode.
Right.
So often the first 5K goes out really fast, not as fast as it did this year with Kipchoge taking it out in, 13:48 for the first 5K? But that it's a little bit, there's one downhill section of the first half, which makes it a little bit quicker, but really it's not a big difference.
That's crazy. I know some of the pace groups went out hard. Greg, you were out there on the course taking some great pictures, which we shared in a photo gallery on our site. And just being out, standing out there, Greg, what was it like? And what did you see when you saw Stephanie and Fernando come by?
Well, I mean, first of all, the crowd is amazing throughout London. It was amazing where I was. It felt tiring just to be standing there. You know, if you've ever gone to a baseball game or a football match here in the UK or anywhere, like if you're out in the sun for 3 hours, that's exhausting. So I was tired just standing there. Imagine having to run the whole time. Stephanie Bruce came through first because the women's field sets off earlier and she looked very strong. I was about mile 16 and a half taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she looked on target with the pace group. I think it got tougher for her soon thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Fernando looked like he was struggling a bit. And when he came by me, he was quite a bit behind Sam Chilenga, but after passing me, he kept form and swallowed up Sam and a bunch of other runners and finished, you know, pretty well in comparison to others. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was, and you can see from the photos that we have, like a lot of people are sweating. Mary Cattaney was burning up already by mile 16. She had a big lead, but that dissolved and she ran like a 118 on the back half.
Yeah. All right. Enough about us and our being uncomfortable watching races. Greg, let's hear about the people who actually ran the races. Please give us a little bit of background on Stephanie and Fernando, and then let's roll the tape.
Okay, great. Yeah, so Stephanie Bruce trains with the Northern Arizona Elite Team in Flagstaff, Arizona, which is coached by Ben Rosario. And both she and the club are sponsored by the running shoe company Hoka Oni Oni. Did I pronounce that right, Brian?
Yes.
Okay, I nailed it.
Most people will say 1-1, but yeah, right. You say one one, and then you really sort of know what you're talking about.
Good. Or at least you sound like you do.
or not.
Steph was a multiple All-American at UC Santa Barbara, where she still has the 10K record, school record. She has a 2:29 personal best in the marathon, which was in 2011, but she also has a 2:31 and a couple of 2:32s, in addition to a 1:10 half and a sub 32 10K. She has two young children, and she's married to a professional runner, Ben Bruce, and the two of them have their own training coaching business as well. They train runners in person and online. She's also, if that weren't enough, Brent, she's an entrepreneur. She has the energy bar company, Picky Bars, mm-hmm. Which we mentioned briefly with Lauren Fleshman and Jesse Thomas. So let's get right to it. Here's Steph. Stephanie Bruce, welcome to Cloud 259.
Thanks for having me.
It's really great to have you. A pleasure. It's been a couple of weeks since London. I'm wondering if you've had time to process your 2:32. I know you are aiming and very, very confident, it seemed, for a 2:28, I guess, or better, a personal best. But the weather wasn't cooperating. So what are your thoughts on your performance?
Yeah, you know, I have had a couple of weeks to kind of digest it, and I'm actually currently writing a blog to get my words out and get the thoughts out there a little better on paper. But it was a mix. I know it was warm, and it definitely wasn't ideal for a marathon, but other people did run well, and I'm someone as a runner that I think bodes well in heat. I had raced a half marathon in Tampa, Florida about 6 weeks before, and that was, I think it was like 70 degrees, but with like 96% humidity. And granted, some of that starts in the dark. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just felt really strong. And we obviously went slower than the shape that we felt like we were in. But I feel like I handled it pretty well. So London was tricky because I had done all this work over the past couple of months, over the past year and a half. And I wasn't necessarily married to a time, you know. There was the pace group at 2:28, but I just felt like I was ready for kind of a big breakthrough and to dust off my PR. But I just felt flat, and I didn't feel very strong even early on in the race. And that's a really tough thing to deal with mentally when you're in a marathon, and that early on, it doesn't feel very fluid. But I just tried to stay calm and think that maybe it would get better. Because the marathon can do that. Sometimes, you know, you have a couple bad miles followed by really exceptional miles. But I just didn't have any exceptional miles in there. So I kind of knew it was going to be a little more of a grind fest than, let's say, what I envisioned. But I was fortunate to have a pace group, and I had a group of women to run through at least 15 miles with. Yeah. And then the last 8 to 9 miles were a big struggle. But I've run so many marathons, and the training we do on our group, we don't give up. And, you know, we train to essentially run our best. And when we're not having the best day, I think we can hang on pretty well. And so that's kind of what I just tried to do the last 10K, at least. My husband, Ben, was at parts of the course where he was like running alongside me. And it's so hard because I knew I was like slipping off pace, and he probably knew that, and he's having to watch that happen. But he's still yelling and cheering for me. Yeah. And then the crowds just lifted me, and the last mile I dug really deep, and I somehow find a way to get back a bit faster than I had been running. But that was the most I've hurt in the last mile of a marathon for a long time.
You say a lot of other runners ran well, but not many. None of the elites were able to manage an even or negative split. None of them, and very few of the other runners. You hung on a lot better than many of them. In fact, you were in the second half. You were only a little bit behind Mary Kataney's second half.
That's funny you say. I did see stuff like that, and of course, like I try to be like, oh well, my last 2K was only like the fourth. It was the fourth fastest of the whole field, but it's just still so difficult. Like when we're training at this level, and you know the fitness you're in, and you know like the feeling of strength. And I think I'm more just dissecting that I didn't have that feeling. And so It's not necessarily about the 2:32 or the 10th place. It's like, I believe because I could run well in the heat, maybe I would have been affected less, or I could have beat other women who like basically I didn't beat anyone I wasn't supposed to beat. I kind of just came in there almost as I was ranked, and it was just an okay day where I wanted to go in there and do something more special, you know, and beat some people that on paper, you know, I wasn't slated to beat. And so that's where more of it was a disappointment. Yeah, but thank you.
You mentioned, well, I saw you at mile 16 and you looked very, very strong. That's about
thank
the
you.
Point, which is about farthest from the finish as the crow flies on the second half of the race.
Okay.
So you looked very strong then, but I guess it wasn't that long after that that you were starting to fade a little bit.
Yeah.
But you said, you mentioned your husband, Ben, he did take a lot of great shots, and you just put out on Running with the Bruces on Instagram. Episode 4 is your London Marathon experience, and there's some great footage on there. What I love the most was when you have footage of after the race or the day or two later when you're walking backwards down some stairs. I think a lot of marathon runners of all abilities can relate to that.
Yes, it's. I was really beat up. Like I was, even for being a flat course, I think because when you fall apart more in a race, or you kind of run out of energy or whatever happens to you, the earlier it happens in the race, I think the longer the recovery is. And so almost the more sore you are. So I was just, pretty beat up the next day. We tried to walk around London to try to get that soreness out of me, but it was pretty comical walking downstairs.
Have you thought yet about your next race? Are you going to run a fall marathon?
I have, yeah. We're still deciding, but fall marathon's definitely in the plans. And then I have a couple road races that we're trying to line up now. And then most likely I'll have just like a short summer road racing season, take a little break, and then gear up for a fall.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if after that experience in the heat, whether the prospect of a midnight marathon entices you. The World Championships in Doha just announced that their marathon, thankfully for Doha, will be at midnight, hopefully not quite as hot as it will be at midday. What do you think about that move?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've always wanted to make, you know, a world team, and the marathon was enticing because I felt like that would be great to mix in and almost prepare for, like, not a world marathon major, but being on the stage of the Olympics, were I to ever make the Olympic team. But it is challenging thinking about it being there, because even with it being at night, I imagine it'll still be very hot and humid. And we'd probably have to look at how hot and humid, because I know that people who run in extremely hot conditions, that can actually like hurt them for later in their career, because their body just goes through so much. So I haven't really talked with Coach Ben. It's not completely off the table, but the midnight part of it is also a little not scary, but like I've run Honolulu Marathon, and that was in the dark for 2 hours, and that's really challenging on your senses. Like your perception of how fast you are going is really warped in the dark, so you think you're going so much faster. So there's kind of an art to running in the dark, so we would probably have to really prepare for that, but that's a little far out from here, so we haven't quite gone down that path yet.
Yeah, that's a ways away, but
so
about your confidence, it seemed just clear that you feel like you have your best running in you. Again, the weather didn't cooperate. But what is it that makes you more fit and confident than ever before after having two kids? Earlier in your career, much earlier in your career, you battled celiac disease, but you've got that under control. But you still have to take care of two kids. So what is it that makes you fitter now than ever before?
Sure. I get that question a lot. And it's sometimes even hard for me to answer. I would have to attribute one, obviously, to my coach, Ben Rosario, and then joining our group, Northern Arizona Elite, because I just thrive under the training that he does, and it's such strength-based training, and I've gotten faster, so speedier from our strength workouts. So I really believe that saying that speed is strength, because I don't necessarily crank out a lot of fast, like 100s and 200s and 400s under our program, but I've been able to kick at the end of races better after having kids than before. There's that physical component, and then I'm not sure if there's a mental component to it. I just, like you said, that confidence comes from very deep down in me. I don't know where it comes from, but I have just this extreme intrinsic motivation to see how good I can be. And but I also have gone through so many races and workouts and situation in my career that I try to enjoy the ups and downs. And even though I do always want more out of myself, and most runners do, I try to like stop along the way and make sure to pat yourself on the back or to just acknowledge like this is where you're at in your path right now. And even if someone else is running this, don't compare yourself to them, because comparison, you know, is the death of you. So I don't know. It's a combination of physical and mental, and that I think the mental part of it really helps push when you feel like you don't have that. When you feel like you have a physical limit, I think that mental part of you can almost push past that in a workout or in a race.
What about the time management aspect? I mean, there's got to be so much more to do in your day. We've heard other guests say that because they have to be more focused, that somehow helps because it's all business when you're out training. Is there anything to that?
Yes, no, I agree. We're very fortunate. We have a great daycare setup where our boys go to a daycare 5 days a week. So we don't have them for most of the day. My husband and I switch off who gets up in the mornings with them while the other person can maybe sleep an extra 30 minutes. And then, yeah, we take them to daycare and then we go to practice. And then the rest of the day is full of either naps, massage appointments, gym work, strength training, different things like that, a second run, and then we go pick them up. But yeah, I think because you have so much more on your plate, you're very efficient with your time and you don't really have a lot of room to just be lazy, so to speak, lazy for us. And then when I go on trips or I go to races, like I know how much I'm sacrificing not being with the boys and having to have, you know, babysitter stay with them, that I want to be so sure I can look back upon my race and say that I gave everything I had, and I don't want to have any regrets, you know, like coming back to the boys knowing I was gone for 2 to 3 days. So I think that's definitely a component of your shift in mindset as a parent.
Interesting. You know, I looked up the 5 fastest women's marathoners of all time: Paula Radcliffe, Mary Kataney, Tarunish Dibaba, Vivian Truyat from that race in London, and Catherine Dereba, Catherine the Great. 4 of them, all of them except Paula, ran their fastest times when they had children. And even Paula didn't slow down much. She won a bunch of majors after having kids. So basically all 5 of them were great running moms.
Yeah, I think there's something to that for sure.
Certainly dispels any myth that anybody has that there's something that would be physiologically hard to come back.
Yeah, I think it's more scary for some athletes because, one, they don't know what their sponsors are going to react. Like, I was really fortunate that Hoka Une Une, when I got pregnant, they supported me and they weren't like, you have to rush back. But I know with other shoe companies, that's not always the case. So I think that maybe slows down or prevents some women from taking a break in their careers and having babies.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of moms, I want to ask you about the tens of thousands of connections you've made with moms all over the place, and also people with celiac disease through your blogging, through Instagram. I mean, you are a social media presence. You've got 76,000 Instagram followers, and you've really struck a chord with some articles you've written and things you've talked about childbirth and food allergies and so forth. Just broadly, I mean, we'll put links on our site to a lot of that, but broadly, what does it mean to you to be able to connect with fans like that? And what does it maybe mean for the sport?
Yeah, I guess I just feel, I don't know, fortune's the right word, but I've had such a warm reception and welcome. Like sometimes I can't believe what some ladies will say to me. It's as if they know me. It's so flattering to just be able to kind of speak my mind and just really tell the truth about things in my life or in my training as a mom, as an athlete, and how that resonates with so many women. Over the last 2 years, like I've received so many different messages through email, through my Facebook athlete page or Instagram. And it's amazing to think that there are all these incredible women out there who might be struggling with different issues, and they can just appreciate things that I say, because I don't necessarily think I'm that special of a person or that I have different things to offer. I just hope that I'm the same person that if they met me face to face, that I'd be that way on social media. I always try to have that consistency. So yeah, it's been kind of an honor to assume that role, I guess, as a social media presence, and I've just tried to use that in a positive way in whatever I can. And with celiac and having all my food allergies, that's still a work in progress, because I still feel like there are ways that I can contribute a little more to that community. But I think when we started Picky Bars years ago, with me having a gluten dairy allergy, having an energy bar that I could have with me all the time, made that connection to either some people that had that gluten allergy, and then they were able to kind of see like, oh, you could still train full time as an athlete, even with all these allergies and different setbacks. So yeah, it's been a really cool part of my journey in the sport. And I hope I can continue to do so alongside of my performances.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And by the way, Picky Bars with you founded with Lauren Fleshman.
Yeah, and Jesse Thomas.
And Jesse Thomas, Lauren's husband. We had Lauren on the show ages ago. I think she mentioned Picky Bars. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I have to give you, we have to thank you, because you may have been the first person I ever heard on a long form interview on a podcast way back in 2011 with the Let's Run guys. I think it was right after your 2:29 PB.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even, I thought, wow, an amazing thing. I can go on a long run and listen to an elite runner for the entire way. I think it was a big snowstorm and I was training and doing like little laps around a city block or something like that, listening to you. But
that's so cool.
That's when you talked about celiac. And it was really interesting to get to know the runner as a person and an athlete. And that's what we've tried to do on this show and meeting all the people that we are fortunate enough to meet.
Well, thank you. That's very cool.
Yeah. So looking ahead, we talked a little bit about your upcoming sort of choices for marathons, but longer term, you have to be focused on the next Olympic trials. It's a ways off, but that's got to be your number one dream, right?
For sure. And now that we found out that Atlanta has the bid for that, so they'll be the host, we now have a date and we have a place. So you can start to visualize a little bit. And then, yeah, as a team, we just kind of start to plan backwards. So you almost plan your racing schedule and what marathons you want to run, knowing that February of 2020, is that next big goal.
How do you feel about how much deeper and deeper the U.S. women's field is getting? It's just incredible how strong U.S. women's marathoning is right now. You must feel great on one hand, but kind of annoyed on the other that there's so much competition.
Right? That's exactly how I feel now, because I'm like, guys, please, someone like take a break and have some babies. But I've been trying to encourage these women forever, but I don't know if any of the top women will take a break between now and then. It's highly unlikely. No, it does feel great to be part of like such a high level and crop of American women that, yeah, like we're just elevating our own distance running, and then we're becoming a presence on the world stage. And that's really encouraging and inspiring. And I think what shows like my disappointment in London is because although that time, that place like is good to a lot of people, representing the U.S., like it's not great on the world stage. I was still 14 minutes behind the winner, so I'm trying to close that gap on the world scene is essentially a big goal of mine, because I know that's what it's going to take to make our own U.S. Olympic team. So I just want to get to the place where I'm the best version of me come February 2020. I also understand I could run the race of my life, run 2:24 and be fourth place. Like that's just the reality of female distance running in the U.S. right now. So I'm okay with that part of it, but I'm going to work as hard as I can and do my best to put myself in a position, in a few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've certainly got momentum. You're getting better and better. And I think you've got that big PR in you. Which leads to our last question. We ask this of all our guests. How do you help our listeners PR in the marathon? The name of our show is a reference to us, Bren and myself, being on cloud 9 when we run a 2:59.
Yes.
Bren's already done it. He has a couple of 2:56s, but I'm on the outside looking in.
Okay.
So what's, you're also a coach, I should mention. So this is
yes.
Right up your alley. Give me your best tip to get me under 3. Or any of our okay. listeners to their goal.
Best tip is really hard. I'd say that's hard because to me, distance running doesn't happen overnight. Everybody wants to be good yesterday, but it really is a long-term approach. And I think the biggest thing, and I've learned this from my husband, Ben, is just consistency over time. If you can just put in the training day in and day out, eventually, like, you're going to get there, but you have to be in it for the long run. And, you know, there are no shortcuts. You just have to work really hard, but work within yourself. And I think one of my big, like, taglines is dream big, but also train where your feet are. So you can have really big aspirations, like, ahead of you, and that keeps you motivated, but you have to look at where you're at today and tomorrow and train accordingly. And I think that's really important because, you know, if you're meeting other training groups and someone's trying to run 3:10 and you're trying to run, you know, 3:25, like, you're going to be overdoing it a little bit if you're that 3:25 person trying to train with 3:10. So, yeah, I think just finding the right path that you could be on and just staying on that path. Don't try to wander down other ones because it worked for someone else. Just commit to yourself and commit to that one path that you found.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Little steps, right?
Yes.
Like chopping down a tree, little one chop at a time.
Yes.
I love it. So yeah, maybe I should have some babies along the way or something.
No. Yeah, right. I tell everyone that. No, it's funny. I spoke to, like, the NAU team. It's the program around here a few weeks ago, and they're like, okay, takeaways. How do you get better? Have lots of babies. And I was like, no, guys, do not do that. You're in college. So I had to be careful.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that tip and all the insights. It was great to get to know you a little bit better. And we wish you all the best this summer in all your races and for the fall marathon. We'll keep an eye on you.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Greg, nice interview. You know, a few things struck me from that. One, how, you know, all runners are hard on themselves and certainly set themselves against a hard standard. I'm sure for professionals, there's even an extra layer to that. She had a really strong race in London, but still she's not satisfied given that she felt she was more fit. I also noticed toward the end of the interview, Greg, she mentioned, you know, if she ran her best race, talking about how competitive the U.S. Women are in Olympic trials and ran a 2:24. She sort of let slip that 2:24. So I think that gives us an indication of what she thinks she can do.
Good point.
And we'll certainly be rooting for her, as is the next interview guest, Greg. I had the good fortune of actually listening to these before we taped. Greg, thank you. And thank Stephanie and Fernando. Helped me get home yesterday. On my run home, listen to Stephanie, and then on my way to Trader Joe's, listen to Fernando. Any other thoughts you had, Greg, on the Stephanie interview before we roll the tape on Fernando?
No, I think you're right about that 2:24. Didn't occur to me, but I think you're right. And I think I had suggested that she was gunning for maybe a 2:28 because that's what her pace group was going for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she said in response to that she was, you know, maybe hoping for you know, that she was going to go with the pace group and maybe get much better, so maybe 2:26 or, and I think she's in improvement mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, you know, she thinks that by the trials she should be maybe a 2:24 runner. So it's just going to be incredibly exciting, especially on that women's side. The men's side, because it's more wide open, if your name is not Rupp, there are probably a dozen people with a legitimate shot. So, you know, Fernando, our other interview, has got to think he's in it because it's such a wide open field. He says at one point in the interview, 10% chance of mm-hmm. making the Olympics, but that's a great chance. I mean, that's a good, I would go for that. So let's get to Fernando. He is from, as he mentions, Fresno, California. He spent many years and is currently in Boulder, Colorado, training with his coach, Brad Hudson. And Fernando also has his own coaching business, Kabata Training Systems. As we get into in the interview, he's run 2:11 twice. He's won a U.S. marathon champs. But amazingly, currently he doesn't have a shoe sponsor, Bren, although he's formerly run for Reebok and Newton. But I think this interview is really about Fernando the person
mm-hmm.
as much as is the runner, although running is such an integral part of who he is. But I was just amazed at how open and just giving he was of himself in this interview. So let's get right to it. Fernando Kabata, welcome to Cloud 259.
Thanks. Really appreciate you guys reaching out, giving the opportunity to showcased some of my life. Pretty awesome. Thanks.
Well, the pleasure is all ours. I want to get right to London. It's been a couple of weeks, but you ran a 2:17 in the most un-London-like weather with the heat and the sun, and every elite ran a positive split and slowed down, but you battled hard and never blew up. It must have been hard, though, so tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, going into this race, I was pretty stressed out already, not even with the race. It was more just with school. I recently went back to school after years and years and years of not being in school. So I just, I'm 36 years old. I actually turned 36 in London. So this January, I went back and tried to finish up my first degree. So, you know, I went from not doing any school and just being a selfish runner to all of a sudden take a full load of classes and 15 credits and stuff like that. So that's 5 classes. And so, but the problem is I was being ambitious in school and I'm trying to get good grades, right? So, you know, I've been really focused on my education, just to have something to fall back on once this is all over. So going into London, I mean, I was just grateful to be going on the starting line, 4 months prior or so, or maybe 5 months in December, I broke my collarbone. And I was unsure if I was going to have to pull out of London or not. So I waited a couple weeks. No, I waited a month. So I said, look, 14 weeks till London. If I cannot start running, how am I going to be in good shape to run against the best in the world, let alone a PR? I mean, just to go and finish, you know, like how am I, you know, I don't know. So I took a month off and I started running. And this is 14 weeks prior to the race. And so I run and I said, you know what? All right, you got to run 7 miles. So I ran 7 miles, 8 minute pace. And I had my figure eight shoulder strap, which was holding my my shoulders back and the right position. And I wasn't feeling really any pain. I mean, I was kind of sore on my shoulder, but then it ended up working out. So I did 2 weeks at 55 miles. And then after that, 12 weeks to go, I said, you got to start running 100 mile weeks. So I just threw myself in it, 100 miles. You know, my shape wasn't really where I wanted to be. But then all of a sudden, 3 or 4 weeks before the race, I actually started feeling like my old self again. Like, we started running good workouts, positive, and I was just happy. I'm like, oh, maybe I could run something good. I didn't even know what was good. So, you know, 4 weeks before the race, I went to Warsaw and I ran a half marathon in great weather, and I ran a 106, like 30 or 15, and getting like 15th place or something. And so that was my race going in to London. And then in London, you know, add on 40 degrees, you know, it's 70 whatever degrees and hot, and I ended up going through at 106. Yeah. 4 weeks prior, that's what I ran for an open half. So I just went to London. You know, when I go to these big races, I don't really necessarily have to be in the shape, great shape. I have to rely more just on myself and believe in myself, because I do rise to the occasion. And some of the few performances we could count on one hand, that's exactly what had happened when I ran 2:11 or broke the American record on 25K or went some race. It wasn't like my fitness showed it like in practice. It's just, I just rose to the occasion and I just willed myself. And so, yeah, London definitely, it was a battle and I am happy with the overall outcome. So yeah, I'll stop right there.
Well, first off, I mean, how did you break your collarbone?
Thailand, motorbike. So doesn't go good together, I guess. So I had the full Thailand experience. How about that?
It sounds like you've been traveling the globe. You've been in London and, Thailand, and where was your half marathon again?
That was in Poland, Warsaw. So yeah, I'm all about experience. I'm just like anybody, just trying to do the best with what I have. And you know, more so than ever with my running, I'm being 36 now, I know I still have a strong 4 years. But then we start saying, okay, how many springs marathons am I going to run in those 4 years? How many falls? And there's so many countries that I want to run in. And so really, I mean, I want to run fast, but I want to go to these races. I want to be a part of them. So, you know, you only live once. So I'm trying to do as much as I can within reason, I guess.
That's really exciting. So before we leave London, when did it start feeling hard? Was it easy when you went through at half at that 106? Were you still feeling good then?
I didn't want to go that fast. We were supposed to go faster. You know, some of the guys I was running with, they have some designated pacers. And that was way too fast. And everyone knew it. But everybody stubbornly still went. I mean, even our pacer, we were supposed to go 105.30. To be honest, I was thinking 106.30 on a perfect day. I was thinking I honestly, in my heart, thought that if everything went well, I could see myself running a high 2:12:45 or so.
Right.
I knew it's not Berlin. I knew that our pack eventually would be thin and, you know, it wouldn't be some nice, consistent pace going. And also, I mean, London's hard. I mean, even though, it's not Berlin. So Berlin is really, really flat. You know, Chicago's really, really flat. But London is a fast course. But I think more so just, you know, putting the best on the streets, they're going to go and run whatever, you know. Kipchoge will probably run 2:05 going uphill the whole way, you know, for a marathon.
You know, you beat a 2:03 guy. Adola ran a 1:29 on the second half. I think he deserves big props for finishing the race running a 1:29. He's a 2:03 guy.
Yeah, probably had some sort of deal or something. He had to finish the race. So, but anyways, I started feeling tired around 8 miles. And then our pace would slow down. And the guys would slow down, so I was happy. I did not care if we slowed down to 1:09 the first half. If it was my goal, I would have did it all over again. I probably would have tried to go 1:08 the first half and then tried a negative split and maybe run 2:15. But it wasn't really going to change my overall placing. So I think there's really nothing I regret. I'm just happy that my body didn't totally shut down, and I have never ran as well as I did in the spring and in the heat, because normally I run all my great races, my PR and everything, in the fall. So this is the best performance I've ever done in the heat and in April.
That's interesting. So that's, yeah, because it is harder to train in the middle of winter, right?
I guess, you know, it's just we blossom, you know, we grow like things blossom at certain times of the year. You know, I'm really on in the fall, and for some reason I just never really put it together in the month of April. So I proved to myself that I am capable of running the heat. And, you know, when you run a good race, I mean, we're so hard on ourselves. We look at a time and we're like, oh, man, I didn't do good. I didn't get my PR. But, you know, when I crossed, I just knew. I just was filled with joy. I'm like, all right, I'm back. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's not a performance, like my best performance, but I really believe it's top five. I ran 2:11 a couple of times. I ran a 2:12 on my debut. And then I think I ran like a 2:14 once, my fourth fastest, and 2:15. And those were nothing that great. So I don't know. I think this performance was probably better than probably my fourth best, I would say, for sure, top five. So that was really good.
It's really great that you have that positive attitude. I think it's infectious to not be too focused on the number and just look at the race and in the context of all the conditions.
Yeah.
When I look at your career, you've been an elite marathoner for 12 years now. You debuted in Fukuoka with a 2:12,
right,
and way back in 2006. Not many of those runners are still racing. You won the U.S. champs. You ran 2:11 in the Olympic trials and then another 2:11 in Berlin. What race are you most proud of?
Oh, man, that's hard. I mean, when I won the USA championships in 2008, that was really good for me, because it was actually a race, you know?
Yeah.
And also, you know, I needed, you know, money at the time. And and it was just a big breakthrough for me. And I think just winning a national championship, I think it was my second at the time. And, you know, Olympic trials as well. I mean, Olympic trials was good, but I didn't really take as many risks as I probably should have. Kind of played it safe. And the problem is, it was just a fast year. Any other year, I would have made the team. So just fast year with Hall and Abdi and Meb up front. I mean, to me, to get seventh, that was good. I mean, I always knew in my heart I was good enough. So that kind of just said, okay, well, you're right there. What are you afraid of? So after that, 2016 was a bit of a bummer, but just a lot of mistakes and a lot of things happened. So just didn't work out. So it just wasn't meant to be.
The 2008 U.S. champs, that was in some pretty bad weather, right? Wasn't it driving rain and cold?
Yeah, I used to tell that story trying to impress people, but then after experience Boston, I decided that I don't think I should share that anymore. You know, it's like, doesn't put it really that cool, because it was 49 degrees and pouring down rain, but it wasn't like pouring down rain at the start. So I think we were able to start a couple of miles and then it started pouring down and it got really cold. But like I said, when I was in Boston cheering on some of my athletes and I saw what they had to go through, and that was nothing. I mean, my experience was nothing compared to that. But yeah, no, definitely the weather, you know, stopped people from going faster, and it was more of just like a 1:08 and a 1:08. You know, you're going to have heavy shoes, your quads are freezing. I mean, your hands, arms, but it just was a good day for me. So I wish I had absorb that happiness more then. That's why I know that I hope I run like a big performance now soon, because I promise I will absorb it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in my career, I mean, the biggest obstacle really is accepting happiness to say, hey, Fernando, you deserve this. And, you know, I have my own race, you know, and my race is still far from over, you know, past this running deal. This running deal, I mean, all it's really done is made me grow as a person, show me the world. And yeah, you know, just some lonely kid, you know, born in Southeast Fresno, grew up really poor, and just me and my own little thoughts and dreams and goals, looking at the map, you know, wishing one day I could just go somewhere. You know, I never even knew someone that had been on a plane before. So I came from really humble beginnings. So whenever I go somewhere, it kind of reminds you of me being a kid, and then I'm fulfilling my dreams. So,
yeah. So you read my mind on the next question, because you've told your story of your upbringing a few times, but not everyone knows it. Not all our listeners know it, especially here in the UK.
Right.
Could you just run through it for us?
Yeah. So I am third generation here in the States on my mother's side. And my father's side, I'm second generation, and my roots are from Mexico. So at this point, I don't know Spanish fluently, something that I'm not very proud of. I've tried to learn it, just doesn't really come as easy to me. I have a brother and sister, 8 and 10 years younger than me. There was a big age gap because my father has been in and out of prison all my life, and currently in I'm jail as we speak right now. So I grew up, I feel like, I don't know, I had like a sad childhood. I didn't get the love that I needed. I mean, my mom loved me, but, you know, me and my mom at the same time was, you know, mentally and physically abused by my father.
Hmm.
I have real bad experiences of, you know, I remember my dad hitting me with the belt buckle across the face, and my face is black and blue, and I was 7 years old.
Hmm.
So I didn't really have anyone to kind of come protect me or come nurture me. So I have developed, you know, anxiety, you know, just broken, you know. I never really had self-confidence, really just afraid of everybody, just paranoid, you know. And I discovered running in third grade. I was 8 years old. And when I ran, it was a half mile, 2 laps around a dirt track. I went to school. By this point, because I was born in Fresno, California, which is between San Francisco and L.A. So at this point, I moved to Clovis, California, which is a suburb. My mom got on to a government housing called a Section 8 program. Mm-hmm. So it went off your income. So I was allowed, we were able to go to a safe neighborhood, and I got to, you know, go into a community that had sports. And so in third grade, we had physical education, so I got second place in that race, and between my schoolmates, like 25 kids. And when I got second place, that was the happiest I have ever felt. Like, it's like telling a kid to go into Disneyland or something. So, yeah, and, you know, I started with that, and just kept with running. And, you know, I always grew up poor. I mean, even till I was 17 years old, we needed government assistance. My mother, she was 36 years old when she got her GED. Equivalent to a high school diploma. So she, you know, she grew up working on the fields along with most of my family. Everyone worked minimum wage jobs. No one really, we didn't really have anyone that really did much. I mean, there have been a few of an uncle and an aunt who early on they were successful, and they are successful. I mean, everyone kind of grew and blossomed in their own way. But growing up, didn't really have positive role models. The heroes and the people I looked up to and wanted to be were not necessarily the typical productive members of society. You know, I looked up to, you know, my father and his actions, and, you know, that was my influence. And it's a very nasty cycle that I came out of. And there's millions of boys that are exactly my background that have to deal with what I grew up in. Gangs and drugs and, you know, violence, and just keep going in and out of prison. You're just a number. And so I got out of that. Thankfully, it's because of running.
Well, it's incredibly powerful, to say the least. And thank you for sharing. I mean, I guess running is a sort of safe place for you where you can clear your mind, I suppose, right?
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, it's a sometimes a story I don't tell it as well as I do. Other times it's I'm repeating myself, but I think it's necessary to share it. Mm-hmm. It seems like so long ago, but yet it seems like yesterday. You know, I could still feel all those emotions that I had when I was little. But I think it's necessary because maybe there's one kid that hears this or person or whoever, and they're like, oh, wow, like I never knew that. Like Fernando got through that. I could get through this. And that's what's important. And that's what I'm all about. And I forgave my father a few years ago in my heart. I haven't spoke to my father for 10 years, but I forgive him. Like, it's okay. Like, my father had a messed up childhood. He was a heroin addict at the age of 14, shooting up heroin in his arms. You know, his parents didn't love him. You know, he's a bandit. A lot of bad stuff happened to him. So, like, it's just a cycle, and the cycle ends with me. You know, like, I am going to turn over a new leaf. I am going to, my future kids, my future family is never going to have to go through anything I went through. And that's more my motivation now, just to keep pushing and being successful. And that's what I'm all about. And running has given me confidence, you know, helped me cope. There's so much things. It's so awesome. You know, it's good to see the world. I mean, how awesome is that?
Yeah, see the world, and you're one of the best in the world in your craft. There are millions of people who run marathons, and you're one of the top small number. And you inspire a lot of people. There's more than one kid out there, I'm sure, that you're inspiring. What is it that motivates you now, though? Is it seeing the world? Is it, you know, cracking 210? Is it making an Olympics? What is it really that keeps you going? Because it's still a lot of work.
We all want to be good at something in life, you know? Like, what do I have? Like, I know I have my ambition, but right now, today, I know what to do. I have all these ideas in play, and I have a lot of contacts, a lot of people who would help me and back me up in any way they can. But I just want to see this through, you know? Like, what do I have to lose? Like, I won a long time ago. I won in high school, you know? I just wanted to be, we call it the Valley Champion in our area. And it's the race before the state championships. To be a Valley Champion was everything. I've won 6 individual Valley Championships. I won already a long time ago. This is 18 years ago. But it's like, can I make the Olympics? So, like, can I? Yes. Will I? I mean, probably not. I mean, what's the percentage? 10%? But it's still a chance. If I don't try, I cannot live with myself and go on in life wondering, could I have been an Olympian? I want to go until the wheels fall off. And I'm like, you know what? I did all I could do. I was 20th best, or I was 7th best, or I was 2nd best, or whatever. As long as I try, win, lose, or draw, like, I just want to go out there and keep trying. And yes, I want to break 2:11. I mean, I had all these goals, you know. I was 24 years old, 12 years ago. I run 2:12. Man, I was like, oh, man, I'm going to run 2:07. Yeah. I'm going to get a medal in the Olympics. Yeah. I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to do this. I'm going to have all this money. And it did not go anywhere near that. But sometimes, like, we start out and have these goals, and sometimes we might never get the goals. But I'm just happy that just to have this fire in my heart and just to get up and, like, believe still, you know? And I don't need anyone else to believe with me. I just need to believe. And once I believe, it's like anything is possible. The stars do align.
Okay, great. Do you have any thoughts about your next marathon in the fall, or you're going to be traveling the world or looking for a fast course? Or?
Oh, man. You know, I want to run an early one, like in September. So obviously, like, thinking of Berlin, that's where I ran 2:11:36. And I wasn't even, I should have been faster in Berlin. I was going through a bunch of tough times. You know, I was depressed. I almost was going to drop out of the whole race itself.
And you still ran 2:11.
Yeah, I mean, I just was going through a lot of tough time the week before. I was in Prague all alone, depressed in a hotel room, just questioning my whole existence. Like, why am I here? I was going to go home. And I just felt like I had the flu because my personal demons have, like, totally just put me down and made me so negative, so depressed. And I was going to go. But then I decided, no, you're going to go to Berlin, go run your 218, just go run something. You got to run the Berlin Marathon. So I said, okay, I'm going to go. Man, all of a sudden, 2 days before the race, I just started feeling good. I was like, man, I'm happy to be here. What do I got to lose? Started running the race, and I was negative every freaking step of the way until, like, I got to halfway mark. And then all of a sudden I heard my name. Someone said my name, go Fernando. Huh. And it was actually a buddy that I known for years. He lives in Berlin, and it snapped me out of it. I said, wait a minute. I'm known. I said, wait a minute. maybe there's people who are tracking me, or like they're seeing my awesome splits and they're excited because like I'm on sub-2:11 pace. So yeah. I said, man, if I run fast, maybe they'll be happy too. So then I said, you know what, let me try to keep going. So then I was engaged finally. And it was on 2:11. We went through 105.12. Just you know, the last 4 miles came, and so therefore added on another minute on my time. But yeah, ended up out 2:11:36 is the PR. And you know, it would be cool to kind of go there. Yeah. I don't know if I'm wanted. You know, these days there's so many fast races, you know, and let's see. Also, I would love to go to maybe like Buenos Aires marathon the end of September. I've never raced in South America, and I would love to race in South America. And I think that they ran 2:10 there. I don't know if it's possible, but I'll definitely want that as an option. I thought about here in the States, maybe Twin Cities. You know, I've won there before, and I've gotten third there. And these were USA Championships 2008 and 2010. And it's a good course because the winner is like 2:11. And so I'm like, well, why worry about time? Just go for a win. Because all these other races, you got to run 2:03 or so to win. And I'm over here 7 minutes back. So how about, like, don't worry about any pacers. Just go run with them. So that'll be cool. I'm thinking about that. And I know I got to run New York. Let's see if they would want me. It's just real hard to get in some of these races. There's so many people giving emails. You know, race director, elite coordinators probably get 400 or 500 emails, you know, saying, give me, give me, give me. So, we'll see, but definitely, I'm going for it. I mean, I'm not really going to take many breaks anymore. Cause like I said, before we even started this interview, I can't afford to take up too much time and get unfocused. And then it takes me all the whole year to get back in shape. So I can't do that.
That's great. Well, my vote is for Berlin, cause I'll be there. And if you run it, I'll be like almost an hour behind you, but we'll see. But that would be very, very motivating. But you can't argue with Buenos Aires. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, no, it's a place I've always wanted to go. Yeah.
It strikes me that sometimes I think you're very, very modest in a way. Like it took one of your buddies at halfway to remind you that you're of how good you are in that Berlin race. You said after London that it was great to be there and get treated like a rock star. But of course you're a rock star.
Right.
You're a 2:11 marathoner. You're a great marathoner. You should be treated like an elite. It sounds like sometimes you need reminders of how good you are.
Yeah, thank you. I just I don't know. I mean, I don't like crying about my past, or I don't want anyone to ever feel sorry for me. That's one thing I don't want. I only tell my story to just to inspire others. As far as that, I still have to. I can't say that I've conquered all my demons, because I haven't. But it's a continued process, and that's how we are in life. And, you know, life will humble you. And I have been through life at my age and what I've seen and experienced, and I'm still here. I feel like I'm 80 years old sometimes, you know, mentally. So I just try to be grateful and try to like set ego aside, pride aside. And I just want to be as compassionate and aware and present as much as I can. That's my goal.
Well, it comes across. It really comes across. And your honesty is really appreciated. I mean, it's really quite inspiring. We interviewed Steph Bruce just yesterday, and you're both the top Americans. And she's been connecting with people all over the place with her being a mom and running and some the things that pregnancy does to your body. She's really tapped into a lot of things by being out there and being honest. And I'm sure you're doing the same.
I said, no, definitely. I think I try to reach out to the odd man out. Maybe they just, you know, there's people, you know, all my life, I mean, I felt kind of different from everybody, just being, you know, a Chicano, being from where I'm from and doing what I'm doing. Because people who look like me, sound like me, they don't really, there's not many of me that are doing it out here, especially in the professional running scene.
That's right.
And I represent my cause is a lot bigger than one would even think. So. Just me being here, I'm defying the odds.
Yep.
Me just doing what I'm doing, I'm not, just not being a gang member or not working in construction or not being in the fields or, you know, like that's what normally in my country, what, you know, the Hispanics are used to. So therefore, if someone's winning a national championship or something, then it's odd. Then it's a little off. I go against something, right? So definitely, I'm all about just trying to be successful and keep pushing it. So letting other people know that you could be successful too.
So two more questions. One is, when do you get your degree?
Hopefully this time next year, I get my first degree. So actually, I have my last final tomorrow. So I attend Metro State University in Denver. Uh-huh. I am shooting for honors. So right now, my fingers are crossed. I'm hoping that once it's all said and done, I get a 3.83, maybe 4.0. So, and then after that, you know, I'm extreme as getting going to get a master's in social work, or the other extreme, going into law school. So it's one of those. It's whatever I could do to help. It's not money driven. It's like, where would I be best at? And so, both ends of the spectrum, I think, I could do some, really good work. So we'll see. I'm excited for my next phase in life, but there's still plenty of, running and all that now. So I'm definitely enjoying that too.
There sure is. So the last question, it's about help. It's about giving some help to others. You're a coach. You've got Kabata Training Systems.
Yes.
You coach runners of all abilities, but they're all pretty dedicated. And that's kind of like our listeners. They're all serious runners, whether they're looking to break 2:30 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
So I want you to contribute to this amazing collection of marathon advice we have from the pros. The catch is you can only give one tip. So how do you get any of our listeners to get a 2:29 or a Cloud 2:59, hopefully for me in Berlin, or a 3:49 or any personal best? What's a great marathon tip?
You don't always have to punish yourself to get a good workout in. You know, I think there's people who feel that they have to kill themselves in training just to say, hey, I did a good job today. You know, marathon training is definitely a consistent, patient situation. Just like a marathon, you're running 26 miles. If you feel good at 4 miles, you're not just going to start running 30 seconds faster per mile. So it goes with training. It starts with training. It starts with discipline and patience. And so sometimes people are just used to beating themselves up and want to run hard. And that's when you get into problems. So I don't know if that's as good of a tip, but I always...
It's a great tip.
Just flow with it.
It's a great tip.
Don't fight it. Yeah, so...
Yeah, I don't think we've had that one before, but I think it's great. Just don't try to run it like everything's a race.
Right. Definitely, don't punish yourself. Don't, a lot of, because, okay, and then it goes back to if you ran a good workout but you didn't hurt, people feel like they didn't do a good job because they didn't suffer. A lot of people are hurting in this world, and you don't know it. Maybe you're hurting a little bit. Maybe you don't realize you're hurting a bit. And then sometimes it takes somebody that's aware, that's a pretty deep person. Sorry, I'm a deep person. and I really, we're all energy. So for me, I always would punish myself because I was used to being punished. And so therefore, that's why I never would think, hey, I deserve this. Hey, you know, you did a good job. You know, I never really hear good job. Like, hey, good job, son. I never really heard that growing up. So I'm always like, oh, I got to do more. I got to do more. I got to do more. And so all I try to tell everybody, like even people I train, to be gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
To be gentle. So, but there's so much, you know, things about marathon training. You know, I could say, hey, run this many miles or whatever, but everyone's so different. You know, don't burn the candle at both ends. You know, there's a lot of people who read about running. Okay. And so we get advice from elite, and then people want to take that advice. The problem is that training is not for them. That training is for someone who could take naps, who doesn't have three kids, you know what I mean? Like all this stuff, burn the candle at both ends. And so you got to be very careful on that. And when you train, you got to be realistic. Say, hey, what are the factors? What kind of takes energy from me? And you got to plan accordingly. Now, if you hear someone says, hey, you need to run 70 miles a week. Well, if you can only get 7 hours of sleep or 6.5, you know, and then you got, you know, family things, work things, all that. You know, maybe all of a sudden 50 miles might be it, and you embrace that and you focus on that. It's nice to get advice from elites, but I wouldn't always just take it literally. I mean, use the elites more for, to get inspired, you know, to hear us talk or something. That's cool. But our trainings, we're lucky, and we're that we're able to train and take naps and focus all our time on that. So sorry for that mixed, confusing question.
It's all fantastic. It all makes sense and it's all really valuable and I really appreciate it. And Fernando, we've got to let you go and study for that final. We're all counting on you getting that 4.0 and then smashing it in your next marathon.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you again, because I think you've got a lot more to say and we want to hear it, but we'll cut it short for now and we'll just root for you in your next marathon. And thanks again so much for all your honesty and all the great discussion today.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for your interest. Talk to you soon.
Wow, that was fantastic. What an interesting contrast of interviews. So I think with Fernando, I think his it's such an interesting story, and he's such a. I was quite riveted listening to that interview. I'm unfamiliar with his background and with his. I knew the general outlines of his running career, but not the specifics. He certainly had longevity in running. I really like his attitude about, you know, what he's looking forward to now in running, and sort of why he's doing it, and just sort of to find out what's there. And, you know, interestingly, he's a, you know, 211 guy. He's light years ahead of where we are, Greg, but even at our level, I think we're good relative to the average person, I guess. And that's part of what motivates me too, is like, let's find out, like, what's there? What is the potential? But anyways, he was really quite riveting.
Yeah, I think even since we started the show, I think the fascination for me with these runners is how amazing and awesome they are and how much time they spend on their craft in relative obscurity. Depends. I mean, Stephanie has a big following. Fernando's well known, but I mean, they're not getting millions. They're not getting a lot of money out of this. So the fascination for me is, what is it that motivates them to work so hard to be who they are? And I think we get a pretty good taste of that from both Stephanie and Fernando. They want to get the best out of themselves.
Yeah.
It's like they feel like they have a gift and they are able to be at the front end of American runners, and they just want to see how close they can get.
Yeah.
It's a curiosity, I think.
I mean, Stephanie came across to me as like quite methodical, confident, in a way, like relative to Fernando, unemotional, very steady. And Fernando came across to me as like quite emotional. And it's interesting that he attributes some of his stronger races, like not necessarily to the training. I'm sure his training for these races was very strong, but to the race day sort of mentality itself, or sort of the competitive spirit. And I do know that, you know, there are days when the races go well, and when if your competitive spirit or energy is really strong, that can make a huge difference. Generally, Greg, you know, for people at our age and stage, I'm always preaching about the training. It's about the training. But certainly people with a really strong competitive streak, I think, are able to crank it up a notch on race day. And sometimes that can make a big difference in the event itself.
And maybe you can build up to that by doing as what Fernando suggested, not killing yourself or hurting yourself in training too much, just, you know, putting in solid training, building, growing, and just saving the killing yourself for the last 10K of the marathon.
Mm-hmm. Where you're... And also the ability to flip the switch from what, 0 to 50 miles a week, and then 2 weeks later, take it up to 100.
Yeah, right. So, well,
okay, time to do 100 mile weeks. Let's do it. That's you know, that's a work ethic and an ability to train that these many of these elites have that us at the moment. So thanks again, Greg. You did a fantastic job covering London. Again, Greg has some photos up from the London race on our site, and now we've got these interviews. A little bit of news in the professional runners world. This is breaking news. Des Linden is going to be running the Boston Marathon champion, is going to be running the New York Roadrunners New York Mini 10K on June 9th here in New York City. For those of us who are here, a chance to see Des in action. Also, Greg, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Galen Rupp came back from his DNF at the Boston Marathon and won the Prague Marathon in a blazing 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 7 seconds. Greg, I also have news from the Eugene Marathon. So my sister Polly was looking to break 4, as we're looking to break 3. She's looking to break 4. And Polly has had a really good training block leading up to the race. I was kind of interested to see whether she would finish within an hour of Nick Simmons, who was in his own quest to break 3. Nick Simmons, of course, the professional Olympian and multiple U.S. champion in the 800 meters, who also has a background in high school. He ran some very fast cross-country races and in college, I believe. So he's got a distance background. Or in high school, anyways. So we got a note from Polly, and I'll read it to you. In typical fashion, I thought it was very well written and very honest. I wanted to thank you guys being me and you, Greg, for giving me the 2 pieces of marathon advice that I actually used during my race. Greg said to find something to smile or laugh at, and I made a point to do that once every mile, even in the last 3 hideous and delirious miles, as I heard from one of our listeners once, we've all been there, at which point I was mostly laughing at myself. A few things that really made me smile in the first half were a young female spectator holding a sign that simply said, "I'm bored," and a huge turkey that trotted by us around mile 8. Bren's advice was to have my quote-unquote best race. From mile 13 to mile 17, I went from thinking I was going to smash 4 to knowing it was out of my grasp. I made a decision to fight to stay in it because I had made a commitment to myself not to break an arbitrary time goal that I've created, but to have my best race. As I think more about the race, I attribute my second half struggle to a few things. I think even though it was cool out, the humidity got me, hovering around 85% during the race. In the last 6 miles, I was dumping as much water over my head as I could get my hands on. At one point, I felt so overheated, I peeled my singlet off and ran in just my sports bra, which I don't often do. I also think I should have done longer marathon pace runs in my training. In both Chicago and Eugene, I ran my first half fairly easily in 1:55, but wasn't able to sustain it. In my 2016 New York City 4:03, I ran the first half in 2:01. I know I've gotten faster since then, but maybe not over such a long distance. Anyway, the good news is my goal is still ahead of me, and I'm motivated to try again. I'll probably wait until 2019 and maybe do Grandma's or try Chicago again. Who's with me? Thanks to both of you for keeping me inspired and motivated. Well, thank you, Polly, that for that heartfelt note, and also for just, you know, putting your best foot out there. It's a gift to, you know, to your loved ones and to people who are following your story to be able to sort of hitch a ride along with you there. Greg, of course, since she's my sister, my heart went out to her even more. And, you know, hearing that she was struggling miles 13 to 17, I've certainly been there. It's tough to make it to the finish line, when you're not feeling great there. But, you know, my brother Dylan got a screen capture of her crossing the finish line at the Eugene Marathon. They had a video at the finish line, and Polly wrote about that, that, you know, she looked the image looked exactly how she felt, which was she was completely exhausted. Like, that was it. She was done. Like, everything she had, she had put into that, to just finishing. And I looked at her splits, and she went from, you know, being on pace, she was 1:55:52 at the half, so she was on pace to break 4, and then the last 5 or 6 miles, she had 10 minutes something per mile. She actually never went into the 11 minutes something per mile, so she held on really well. As people who've run these marathons know, once things go upside down, it can be really hard to keep it in check. And, you know, about, you know, the time goal, I think that this time goal, we have Cloud 259, we have these time goals, they're really good motivators for training. Like, get yourself into shape to try to do it. On race day itself, I think if you're thinking too much about the exact time throughout the race, you may be burning some mental energy. Yep. I think it's fine in the last few miles of the race if you're near your goal and you know exactly what you have to run. I think it can be a tremendous motivating factor. But I give Polly tons of credit for running her best race, for getting the best race she could out of herself on that day, given that she wasn't feeling fantastic, after things turned south.
Which is exactly why you said, you know, run a beautiful race, because you wanted to sort of take that emphasis off the number. You know, it reminds me of something Eliud Kipchoge said. I saw an interview of him in January, and they asked him, what's he going to do in London? You know, because someone wanted to say, are you going to break the world record? Are you going to break two? And he said, I'm going to run a beautiful race.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I told Polly to run her best race. I think run a beautiful race is, I think it's actually a similar, it's a very yep. similar concept.
Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kipchoge's like poetic. I mean, he's the best. We haven't even talked about this, but I mean, he won London. Like, what more can you say? The best marathoner ever. And he's on such a plane that, you know, he's thinking in terms of beauty, not in terms of time.
Can I tell you one other beautiful thing he said? And this, and I'll put it on the show notes. He gave a talk at Oxford in January. And he said, he was talking all about self-discipline, about really getting into the training and being able to shut out the outside world. I think he lives like a poor person when he's in his marathon training in Kenya. But he said, to emphasize self-discipline, he said, the best time to plant a tree is 25 years ago. The second best time to plant a tree is today. So what he meant was just start planting and watering that tree, whatever it is. I just thought it was really beautiful. Just really.
Yeah.
He's an incredible person.
Yeah. I we could dedicate 5 shows to him. I think that's. One other result from Eugene, Greg, is Nick Simmons, who was going to run the whole marathon, ended up at the last minute changing track and running the half marathon. And he sustained an injury, I believe, while mountain climbing or hiking. And that prevented him from getting in the amount of training that he needed to run the full thing. And he came through in the half in 1 hour, 26 minutes and 49 seconds. So that's a good time for an everyday runner like you and me, Greg, but it's certainly not an elite time. And I think it should give a lot of hope to people like you and me that sometimes we can run faster than that, even though we aren't Olympians.
Yeah, that's my half PB exactly.
So I was wondering whether Polly would finish within an hour of Nick, and she does, because
she wins.
He DNFs the marathon.
So Polly wins.
And not only did she went on that count, but she was 155 through the half. He was 126 through the half. So she was within 30 minutes of him just at the halfway mark. And then she ran another half of the race. So she definitely wins the hour challenge for the full marathon.
Yay.
Yay, Polly. Kick butt on Nick Simmons.
Excellent.
That's what I got, Greg, on the elite scene. Certainly there's tons more going on in running that we'll get to next episode.
Yeah, we look forward to it. I mean, we're through spring marathon season. Got a fall marathon to think about. Yeah, you're signed up for New York. You're running New York, and okay. Hopefully I'll be there running New York with you.
That would be fantastic. You're running Berlin, I know. I've got the Brooklyn half. Brooklyn half is coming up. I think that's not this weekend, but next weekend. And
run a half the same day, actually, the Hackney half, which is a hip area of London. It's kind of like Brooklyn, not quite as, it's a little bit like Brooklyn.
Good.
Hackney's kind of cool.
Your leg's fine? No injury there?
I'm just keeping it to shorter runs, and it's been perfectly fine. I don't know what would happen if I went to started long runs, but I haven't really started. We're not yet in the 16 weeks to Berlin even, so yep. I haven't stretched it out yet, but I'm just keeping it cool. What I am doing is running shorter runs and then hopping on a stationary bike. Because that doesn't inflame anything. So that's how I'm staying fit for now. And then we'll see. But I think all systems go.
And the Hackney half, that's you're running that as a race or just as sort of like fooling around?
Somewhere in between.
Racing. It's on.
I'm racing.
Well, let's see, Greg. Who's going to be faster? Me at Brooklyn or you at Hackney? Is this a flat course?
How many minutes?
I'm not giving you any minutes. Come on. You just ran a marathon. You're fit.
You're a 256 guy.
No, it's not right now.
Give me 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm not giving you any time. It's on.
All right, it's on. It's on. We'll do a show right after that. How about that?
Sounds good. For Greg Lemelstein.
Wait. We don't do this enough. Everyone out there, if you're on this long, if you've waited to the end, join our Strava team.
Okay.
Cloud 259. We've got 137 or something outstanding dedicated runners. It's fun. They're all over the world. It's great to see their training. And we want to see you too. So join our Strava team and send us an email. Let us know what you're looking for in the fall. We want to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. And while we're promoting ourselves, actually, we're promoting the group energy, but I'll promote ourselves. Please leave a review on iTunes. That's what they say on all the other podcasts. We don't have very many reviews on iTunes, but they're very positive. And I think it does help people, or so I've been told, find the show. So if you like it, if you don't like it, maybe don't leave a review on iTunes. But if you like it, find it on iTunes and leave a review.
Be honest.
Cloud 259 podcast, or just Cloud 259. I don't know. Find it somehow. Okay. For Greg Lemelstein, who did a great job covering London, this is Brent Jones. Happy running, everybody. And see you next time on Cloud 259.